Later this hour, we will learn about research into another possible government secret, super brainy, visually acute super recognizers whose brains can make out faces from grainy satellite photos even. We go now to the NSA Situation Room, deep in the Pentagon. Recognizer team, what have you got?
Nothing yet.
Is it him?
Is that PB Herman? Neil Patrick Harris?
Come on, folks, we caught a break here. Let's go.
Nothing yet, Chief.
Hey, what's with all the celebrities? Where did you come from, anyway?
Paparazzi. I used to work at Ibiza back in the day.
Well, stick to suspects, okay? Jason Bourne. That's the target.
I want Bourne in a body bag by sundown.
Okay. I've got Sarah Palin on the tarmac in Berlin.
What are you, nuts? Nobody cares about Sarah Palin. You're gonna get us fired.
I can't help it. I recognized her. Sorry. False alarm. It's just Tina Fey. Sorry. So, I'm looking for a kind of Jeremy Renner type, I guess.
Hey, CERT police are looking for an American man carrying a red bank bag.
He just tore up the embassy and he put two cops in the hospital last night.
That's gotta be Bourne. Super recognizer team on it.
Keep going. There, wait.
Wait a minute, guys. I know that face. I know it. Guys, I've got it. There he is. Forget this Bourne fellow. That's Matt Damon.
Matt Damon, you are completely useless.
Forget it.
Super recognizers are people with extremely good facial recognition abilities, and their brain talents were only identified in 2009 when researchers conducted a study on facial recognition. For a while, we've known that people can have facial blindness from a brain injury, but the super recognition talent occurs in about 1 in 50 people. Now, London's Metropolitan Police Service has created a super recognizer unit to identify criminals caught on webcams and closed-circuit TV eyes. Richard Russell is a psychology professor at Gettysburg College, and he helped identify the condition back in 2009.
It's certainly a visual process. It involves looking at a visual image or the light bouncing off of a particular person's face and then connecting that visual pattern to stored memories of people that you've seen before.
So super recognizers, what do they used to do? Work for like the National Enquirer, picking out celebrities in Hollywood?
Unfortunately, they are really not employed in any special ways. The one exception to that is the London Police that's put together a unit of super recognizers. But I think because until very recently, we didn't know that people differed in how good they were at recognizing faces. And so we haven't even yet begun to see the application of this.
And part of the recognizer revelation comes from the fact that there is something called facial blindness or face blindness.
Yes, that was really critical, I think, in discovering super recognizers, because we had known for quite a long time that some people were bad at recognizing faces if they had some kind of specific brain damage. It first became apparent maybe around 15 to 20 years ago that it's quite common for people to be bad at face recognition, and they're just born that way, as far as we can tell, or in any event, they never develop normal face recognition abilities. And I think that discovering that some people were really bad at recognizing faces helped, suggest to people like me and my collaborators that maybe some people were the opposite.
What do you think is the application of learning more about the brain in this regard in terms of possible, visual software and even the use of super recognizers in some security application?
Well, I think that the first thing really is that this is just kind of uncharted territory. The fact that we're seeing the world differently than each other, even though we're not aware of it, suggests that really there's kind of a lot to learn still just about how the brain works, how each of us is experiencing life. And so I think, we don't even yet know what the possible applications of this are. But a couple that spring to mind immediately are, use in security fields. Anytime someone is checking an ID card, probably it would be better if that was someone who is relatively good at recognizing faces instead of relatively bad. At the moment, there really is no screening mechanism for this. So that's one area. Another is this super recognizer unit in London has proved to be quite useful for apprehending people who are believed to have committed crimes. And I think a possible third area might relate to eyewitness testimony. Our legal system places quite a bit of weight on the eyewitness testimony and in criminal proceedings. And I think that it might be useful to understand that that ability varies from one person to the next. You know, let's say if you have a gun pointed at you, it turns out that people tend to just look at the gun and they're freaked out by that and they don't really notice the person who's holding it. But this work really suggests that, let's say, the victim or the person who's witnessing the event, they're bringing their own personal abilities to that occasion. And it might be useful to know, is this someone who's really good at recognizing faces? Are they really bad? That might be a kind of a factor that we would want to consider when evaluating their eyewitness testimony.
And you published your paper, or you and your team published the paper in 2009. What's happened since then?
Well, there's been an increase in the number of labs starting to study super recognizers. There are really a lot of questions that, you know, we still don't know about them. You know, what other kinds of things are they good at or not good at? How might their brains be different? Or is there a genetic component? These are the kinds of questions that people are starting to address now.
Richard Russell is psychology professor at Gettysburg College. Thank you so much.
Thank you, John.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.